He is Justin Davis, user experience designer and intrepid interviewer.
And he is Aubrey Goodman, web services and mobile dev extraordinaire and commander of charitable contributions.
Oh.
And this is a little show that we like to call Distilled. Welcome in.
Welcome.
I just realized we talked about doing this on video, but we didn't. That's okay.
Note the lack of camera.
That's okay. We had our day in the sun doing video, and probably people realized at that point that really probably have faces for radio.
Yeah.
As the case may be. So back we are, only with the sound of our voices, hopefully less abrasive than our faces.
Abrasive faces.
So we are fresh off of an event called Give Day Tampa Bay.
Mm-hmm.
A full 24-hour online giving competition, I guess. I suppose you would call it a competition.
Yeah,
anyway. Of a sort. And the goal was to raise as much money as we could in 24 hours for almost 400 different local charities.
Mm-hmm.
It was put on by the Community Foundation and Florida Next. I believe they cooperated on that event and did a fantastic job at it.
Yeah, our interns are fact-checking as we speak.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
To make sure that Justin is correct.
Yeah, I just realized, please don't ever fact-check this podcast, by the way. And we raised...
That implies that anyone's listening.
Really. There's that. And people don't have to check the facts. They know it's false. We raised over $1 million, $1,050,000+, as I recall, in just 24 hours for 384 different local charities. Incredible, incredible stuff.
It was a really just flooring experience to see the outpouring of support from not only from donors, but also from community members who were here to just kind of... It's like everybody showed up Tuesday morning at 5 a.m. and the thing just happened.
Midnight.
It was amazing.
They showed up. I know.
Well, we were late.
We were late.
And I say 5 a.m., but I really mean 8.
8 a.m. Yeah, exactly.
But exactly. There's a lot of folks showed up to make it happen, to get those donations rolling and, you know, just to keep the media going. We had two different news teams here, various points of the day. And just
it was really good.
An amazing outpouring of support from the community for local nonprofits.
Yeah, it really was a fantastic example of what happens when sort of a community just comes together in a very grassroots type of effort, and the type of change and the type of impact that can be made when that type of thing happens. We were lucky enough to be able to host.
You say lucky.
Lucky enough. We were lucky in a lot of ways.
Very, very many ways, yes. I wrote a blog post about this, which I suppose I linked already. But
yeah.
It's it was just a staggering thing to see everybody come together and everything go right. Even to the... I made mention of it in the blog post. There was... In the middle of things, after everything was sort of in process, and even after, you know, we were going, and it seemed like it's sort of inevitable something has to go wrong, and everybody just kept saying, amazingly, nothing's going wrong.
I know,
and it's
right?
Like, oh, guys, you're just really asking for it.
Yeah, and so
still nothing did.
Yeah, by the way, and we haven't actually explained what we're talking about. we hosted a 3.5 hour long video telecast, I guess you would call it, video, live.
Broadcast.
Live video broadcast over the internet, not over cable.
Yeah.
But wherein we interviewed some probably 12 different charities and their founders or executive directors to give them a chance to tell their story and talk to them about what their goals were for Give Day and the impact it has on their charity and that type of thing. And so we had actually... the prior week, this happened on Tuesday of this week,
May 6th.
To give you context, we're recording this on Friday. And we had said the Thursday before, so last Thursday, I had mentioned to Ned Pope, I said, you know what we should do is we should do like a video thing where we interview all these charities.
It was almost like a dare.
It was almost like a dare. It was almost like, hey, wouldn't that be no way we could ever actually get that done? And literally within hours, we had the wheels moving on how to put this thing together. And we had Jocelyn over at the Community Foundation who lined up an incredible afternoon of guests. That was, without her, that whole thing wouldn't have happened.
Oh, in so many ways, because she gave you a lot of backstory for each person, each org, what they're doing, some of the events that were going on for each one. And without that, I can't imagine how much less awesome
actually
that would have been.
Actually, that material actually was not provided.
Oh, she gave you just the list, and
she gave me the list. I put one of our illustrious interns on dredging up that information.
Oh yeah,
Amy here at the space. I said that morning. At about 11 o'clock that morning, I said, Amy, by 1 o'clock, I need you to go through this list of people, find out what their organization does, and put all that on each on a sheet of paper with the guest name and all that kind of thing.
Okay.
So that's at least have some talking points.
A great shout out to Amy Hubbard for the intrepid
and
effective prep work.
Yeah.
Something she's especially good at.
Yeah, absolutely. So it was... it was a big cooperative thing, and we actually didn't even know if the video thing would work until that morning at about 10:45.
Yeah.
Because the original camera we were going to use did, as it turned out, did not work.
It works just fine.
It
just
works just
fine. Not for
fine.
Streaming HD video over the HDMI port that seems like it should totally work.
Right.
But then when you plug it into the TV and it just doesn't do anything.
It just doesn't do anything.
Even on playback mode, which is just bizarre.
It's bizarre.
It's just plain bizarre.
Yeah,
I can wrap my head around
the streaming
need. Like, you don't want to do that, or like the hardware is more expensive or whatever. You need another box, which turns out we didn't have.
Right.
But yeah, like to think that the, you know, that it just doesn't work. I guess we're just Mac people and we expect things to, quote, just work, trademark.
Yeah, I know, right? You would think.
But
so I ended up having an old camera in my closet at home that I dug out.
The eighth way we got lucky.
Yeah, I know, right? And happened to find the cable that we needed, which was a very bizarre 4-pin to 9-pin FireWire cable.
Because, you know, it couldn't possibly be a newish camera that has anything that resembles a modern standard.
Right, no.
It was like 4-pin FireWire from, what is that, circa 2000?
Yeah, probably
maybe?
So. Probably
like
so.
That. That's the very first FireWire there ever was.
Absolutely.
That's when USB was still just 1.0.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So we pulled it together. We actually made it happen, and it was a great afternoon. You'll be able to see those videos. I know we were going to chop up those videos.
Yeah,
Jocelyn wanted to send them to all the nonprofits because they were all asking for them.
She has been absolutely buried with aftermath
and
just getting on with her regular day job.
Yeah.
And so I there's a lot of stuff on her plate at the moment. She's also going to be sending me some raw data so that I can make some maps.
Yeah.
To show some demographics of zip codes and where the money's coming from and where it's going. And that's exciting. I'm looking forward to that. She definitely has a lot on her plate. And, you know, I want to kind of take some of it off. I'm like, I have all those videos. We recorded everything on my laptop. So all that raw video I have sitting on my laptop. And she wanted it. And I said, yeah, you can have it totally. And I'm thinking, wait, why do you want it? Because if you want it to slice up these videos and all that, like, I'll slice them up and send you the results. And or even just put up wherever, you know, give me the details for the account.
Right. So throw them up on Vimeo or something like that. But I know that the nonprofits obviously want to use that material, and that's great.
Yeah, for sure.
The fact that we were able to give them something that they can use going forward to help tell their story better, I think is a great thing.
They can have plenty of video where Justin asks poignant questions and Aubrey just nods and says, for about 4 hours. I think I maybe said five words an hour, it felt like. There was every so often I was like, oh, something I can say. But it was mostly, and somebody even was like talking to you and was like, by virtue of the seating arrangement, it was just a long, like a dais.
Yeah.
And Justin on one end and me on the other end and the guests in the middle. And inevitably they would turn their shoulders and look at Justin and while they were talking. And a couple of them looked back at me and said, I feel like I'm turning my back to you.
Yeah, I know, right?
You are, but it's fine.
But yeah, that's okay.
It's okay. That's just how it works. I'm really just here for comic relief anyway.
Yeah, it was an odd, kind of odd, but that's okay. I tell you, it is one of the more challenging things to have to talk and interview people for 3.5 hours whom you have never met, mm-hmm. and frankly know zero about them or their organization.
Yeah.
And it's extremely taxing to try to come up with questions that are... I tell you what, I thought for a little while going into it, I thought we had 15-minute slots for everybody, and I thought, mm-hmm. well, you know, 15 minutes... That's actually not very long. That's going to fly by. Uh-huh. That's not true.
No. We could have done with 10.
Oh, my God.
In a couple of them, we got to like 9 minutes, and I'm like, okay, what are we going to talk about?
I know. Like, I kept looking at the clock, and it'd be like 3.5 minutes. At one point, early in the day, so we had a timer that we'd set up on an iPad with 15 minutes on the clock to keep ourselves on schedule, which, by the way, small sidebar. We nailed the timing. Like, we stayed right on schedule.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, almost to the minute, which was...
It was, yes.
That almost never happens in anything live.
We got lucky. That's point number 700 that we got lucky.
And so we... and a big shout-out to our amazing producers, Roderick Colbert and Mitch Neff, who were both very instrumental in...
Without them...
Producing the show.
It would have been...
And again, without them, we couldn't have done it.
Awkward production.
It's amazing how many people it takes to pull off something that looks simple, but it's really not. It takes a whole lot of orchestration to do something like this. And so, you know, Mitch would stand there and Roderick both would sit there and give us the 2 minute, 1 minute, you know, or mm-hmm. give me, because I couldn't see the timer all the time. Yeah. And, but I remember like the first guest that we had on, I looked at the clock and it said 3 minutes and 50 seconds, and I was like, oh, thank God, we're almost through this. And I realized when I looked back at it that it was counting the other direction. I was like, oh shit. How in the world am I gonna come up with something to talk about for the next 10-12 minutes?
12 more minutes. Okay.
Yeah.
And it's not even like we can't just banter. Like, you and I can banter because we know each other very well,
right?
And we have the history, and there's you know, there's a lot of that. But with people we've never met before, and you know, we have no idea what they're doing, and we can't curse, so it's not even like we can drop a little jokes in there. It's very much a family friendly kind of a deal. And that's another one. You know, amazingly, nobody dropped the F-bomb. Nobody.
No.
I was shocked by that. Even
no, like, no, it was really.
There were stories that didn't get shared because I felt like they were inappropriate, and was probably right. And yeah, just it was an amazing experience.
Yeah.
And humbling too, just to see the kind of community come together and just everybody was there to support the event, and there wasn't anybody trying to take credit, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, that was one thing that even people said to us, like, I think one of our last interview guests said like, and what's your name? And we're like, oh, that's right. We didn't even introduce ourselves in the second half.
I know. So no, we really didn't.
There was no plugging. There was no anything. We were there for them.
Right.
And
that
felt very good.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So it was good. You know, I'm assuming that this will happen again. My understanding was that this was a national thing.
The Give Day concept is national.
Does it all happen on the same day?
I think so. And that was one of those things, too. Yeah. I saw a friend of mine as a fundraiser for an organization in Austin. And she, I saw that night, said something about being a part of customer support for volunteer, call-in centers and people, you know, getting people sending in donations over the phone and over the web. And I thought, oh, interesting. And she said... This made me extremely proud. Nationally, all of the total Give Day, and don't quote me on this because it was secondhand from somebody who may not know what she's talking about. I think she does 34 million total in that in that day. So if Tampa pulled in 1 million of that 34 million, how many cities were in that? I mean, that's national all across the country.
Yeah.
So if we were one, more than 1/50th, that means we're probably doing better than the whole state of Florida.
I know. Well, I'm going to go...
Which is impressive.
You banter comically while I try to find...
verbal vaudeville hashtag?
Verbal vaudeville. World Give Day? Is it World Give Day?
Yeah, probably. I mean, the Give Day part seems obvious.
May 4th, 2010.
Okay, that's not the same.
Correct.
No.
Banter. Give Miami Day.
Give Day Miami was actually, so that's some of the history of it and what we were kind of aiming for and why we set our targets on 1 million. It's sort of an arbitrary number. It's a nice round number and it seems like, I don't know, plausible maybe that we would be able to get it,
yeah,
you know, raise $1 million in a day.
Yeah.
So, I know that, Miami had raised $1 million in one of their Give Day events either last year or the year before that. And so some history about why we did this. You used the word impact sometime earlier, mm-hmm, in the show. And the Florida Next Foundation runs events all over the state called Impact Forums, wherein they get a bunch of local folks together to essentially have kind of like a hackathon for making ideas for improving the local community in any way that can mean. So any idea you have, you know, come in with that, pitch it, and, you know, there's sort of a competition for which of all of the ideas that end up getting selected, and it ends up being two or three ideas out of the however many there are that they select and, you know, choose to evolve and take some action on. And this was one of them. Somebody pitched, I think it was an attorney, pitched the idea of micropayment philanthropy and getting young people involved in philanthropy and giving and inspiring local giving. There's a lot of inspiration and a lot of focus these days over the past few years on local commerce and, you know, buying local, eating local, and that sort of stuff. And this is just taking that to the next,
yep,
level and saying giving local as well. So I'm really amazed at the outpouring from the community to get to where we did. You know, if Miami can do 1 million and now Tampa has proven we can do 1 million, that means that other small cities can also, you know, maybe have a much bigger impact than they believe possible.
Yeah.
And I think that's the key, is that believing that it's possible. I mean, we talk all the time about how entrepreneurs have this sort of mental illness of believing things are possible when there's absolutely no evidence to suggest that they might be right, let alone might have a shot of being substantially correct.
Yeah.
But
I found it.
Oh, did you? Slash banter.
Slash banter. 53,148,000.
Oh, that was the total?
531. Yep.
Is that international total or national total? Because internationally, that would be awesome.
I think
if
this is
national.
National.
Okay.
Because it's Give Local America.
Yeah, that's what it was that, yeah, she was talking about.
Yeah.
I guess her numbers were wrong. Sorry about that.
Now I really want to see the breakdown by city.
Mm.
To see, mm-hmm, not that it's a competition, but it is. and
well,
we
do
win.
Like to win.
Yeah. I
I don't seem to be very good at it. But
I can't stand not winning. It's just, it's, well, you know what's interesting is that they don't have this, so that's unfortunate.
Well, if the rest of, I mean, if Give Day Tampa Bay is any indication of what the rest of the organization at large is doing, then that's par for the course. We still don't have the maps or any of the data analytics,
right,
out yet, and it's 2 days, 3 days later. So
I wonder if my formal town, my former home of Nashville, Tennessee, did you participate? Yes, they did. Let's see how we stack up to Nashville.
Okay. There's about similar size city, I think. Nashville's about 1 million, right? In the Nashville,
you know what? This is a
metro area.
This is a terrible website. We're not even going to look at this.
Oh, all right.
It's horrible. Hey, Give Local America. We have some folks that could help you with that.
yeah.
Not very good. They have no stats.
No stats.
At least on the mobile site, you can't even look up like stats.
Hmm.
That gate looks like Brandon Lewis's gate, but does I could it? Be incorrect about mm. that.
That's the thing about these rooms with yeah. banners across the middle where you can only see people's feet.
Yeah.
You have to identify them by their gait yes. or by their socks in
gait
the case of
and or
Darren Lewis.
Footwear, footwear accoutrement.
Oh, I should actually give a shout out to Mega for sponsoring the meeting room here
yeah.
at the Tampa Bay Wave.
Yeah.
Where we are currently recording. And I don't know if you can tell where we are based on the slight echo from the two walls of glass that we have in here.
Yeah.
I noticed that as soon as I started, I was like, oh, didn't Oops. Bother to check for echo.
Standing waves. Yeah.
Womp, womp.
Yeah, but this is a really great little room here mm-hmm. at Tampa Bay Wave at the First Wave Venture Center. There's a little room called the Meeting Space that has a couple chairs and a little couch-ish mm-hmm. thing and a whiteboard, nice. And then, of course, the glass that you can also write on with a whiteboard as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is frosted on the outside, which is... Nice, because if it was frosted good. On the inside, then I think the whiteboard markers would probably not work so effectively.
Yeah, that's true. So it's a nice little room. We need actually like six of these.
Yeah,
you
we
know
do.
What I mean.
And the sponsor for each of them.
Yeah.
So that we can
ideally so
start to.
I don't think we even have the room. That's the weird thing about this space. It seems big until you realize that it's really not.
Well, it is big. There's lots of big open space, but there's not a lot of closed
right.
off, cordoned off space for people to do smaller things.
Yeah.
Like meetings and
yeah.
podcasts.
Yeah. Which, you know, it's a tricky balance in a space like this, like chopping
yeah.
it up versus leaving it open and all that kind of thing. So.
Yeah. But we did have yoga here this morning.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
There's a lot of things that have been growing in this space. Mm-hmm. Like we have some wellness partners now. We're doing... yoga and massage here at the Tampa Bay First Wave Venture Center,
which is good because all of us are well
stressed out, cracked out, crackheads,
incredibly unhealthy individuals generally speaking.
Hey, I would normally have been having acupuncture on this Tuesday and I totally forgot to reschedule that.
Ah,
but I got an alert on my phone about 15 minutes before we started recording
oh.
that said, "Oops. You have acupuncture in 15 minutes." And I thought, oh, I feel bad about that. I wonder if I'm going to be charged for that.
Yeah.
But
that's unfortunate.
Yoga, acupuncture.
Right.
Regular drinking.
Very regular.
I don't know
drinking.
If that's all necessarily. One of these things is not like the other.
Yeah. Well, that's exercising part of you.
Yeah. Exercising your liver, is it?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. So I, how much time do we have left here on our,
we have about 9 minutes.
Okay.
No, 7 minutes.
So I'm going to take this last 7 minutes because I have a tech thing I want to talk
about. Oh yeah. Yeah. Please do. This is a technology podcast after all.
Yeah. I have an idea.
Or at least plays one on TV.
And I think this, yeah, I think this is interesting. Because it's something that I'm going to build, I think, for Drawer.
Mm.
But I think a gajillion people would want to use this.
Mm.
But I don't
Which
know
means at least 50 of them will pay you.
At least 50 will pay. That's right.
That's right. That's the ratio, right? A gajillion to 50.
A gajillion to 50 sounds the freemium. Yeah, that's the law of freemium. yeah. So I have a problem. I don't have a problem, but I have a problem. I have many problems, but this particular problem is that I get users on Drawer every day.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a problem. That's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
When I get these users, I get an email to myself. That email says, you just got a new user. Here's their name. Mm-hmm. Here's their username.
Oh.
I can also send myself their email address.
Yes.
That way I can just, I'm monitoring who all is on there. See if I know this person. If I don't, blah, 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 it is. It's really kind of a vanity metric for myself.
Mm-hmm. How good you can feel about your day.
Pretty much. Here's what's interesting. If you start a service like Drawer, like something else, whatever the name of your service is, you have people that are using it and you're providing them a service and they're enjoying it, presumably. It's the reason they signed up. You have a relationship with them and you as the founder, the person who created this thing, have a chance at having a really even greater relationship with those mm-hmm. folks because you're the founder and there's a little bit of a thing there, right?
Well, people like love to get communiques
from
the founder. It makes them
right.
feel important.
Exactly. So here's what's
makes
interesting.
Feel like early adopters.
Yeah. What if there was a way for me to know which of my users, this is going to sound terrible, sorry drawer users, which of my users I should give a little extra attention to?
Okay.
And so, for example, if we are rolling out a product for, say, hotels, and I have somebody who works at a hotel sign up to use drawer, it behooves me to probably reach out to that person personally and welcome them to drawer, make sure they have what they need, and probably follow up with a phone call to tell them about what else we have in the B2B space. Right now, that's a very difficult process. I have to monitor each person that comes in. I have to look at their email address, see if that email address has like the name of a business or something like that that I'm interested in it, all that kind of thing. But
you don't get Sergey at google.com.
Yeah, right. But this can be automated. I think you can create a web service whereby you post a user's information, their name, username, email address, whatever information you have, to the service. The service then goes out to LinkedIn, goes out to Twitter, goes out to Facebook, goes out to all this, assembles a profile of that person, and sends that profile back to you.
You know, you're describing Kite Desk.
I think I am. Basically, or at least describing
you're describing a possible additional feature
of Kite Desk.
Of Kite Desk.
This is like Kite Desk as a service.
Or maybe just like a one-off service. So instead of selling Kite Desk into an enterprise,
right?
Jack Kennedy and Jared Rodriguez, the CEO and CTO respectively, could maybe provide this as a third-party service to other businesses,
right?
As a software as a service product, where you say, "We'll give you this one thing, and you tell us what you know about that person."
Right.
Not, I mean, it wouldn't be hard for them to do that. They already have an enormous graph of data. Right.
It wouldn't be hard to do it. And I think you can get really, sophisticated with this. I think can do things like send me an alert if a person signs up that matches this particular industry or that has these keywords in a profile.
It's like Kite Desk Hero reports.
Kind of, yes. Send me Kite Desk and Google Alerts, right? Like all mixed together.
Yeah.
Like send me an alert if somebody in this area in this with this title signs up for my service. It's essentially cutting through all the manual process you would have to do to know who your customers are and automate that so that you rise or float up the really VIP important customers to the top of the pack. So you just see who you really need to pay top attention to.
I think we need to call it Know Your Enemy.
Know Your Enemy. This would be, at least for me, this would be a huge, huge thing.
Yes. And it actually has the same sort of a smell as the other service that we had talked about for similar purpose, which is email validation. So if somebody signs up with your service and you want to know if that's a spam bot, it would be nice if you could have some programmatic way that I could send an email address to an API endpoint and just get a true or false back.
Right.
This is or is not a real person.
Right.
So maybe that's a subset
of
that service. So they send back a null.
Certainly. Yeah.
That means that
we
person
can find
doesn't
nothing
exist.
About this person.
Right. This is a spam account. They don't really exist.
Yeah, exactly.
And they could even go further and do things like, because I'm finding this trend now in botnets. They're getting very, very sophisticated. So now they actually have things like they'll go out and create a persona. They'll create a Facebook page with what seems like authentic content. They'll create a Twitter account. They'll create a LinkedIn account as if they are a real person.
Yeah.
And because none of these services actually provides a real person validation unless they're taking credit card information, which can easily be, again, spoofed.
You
know, like some spam organization can just pay for something and suddenly they seem like not spam. So I think that's all a subset of the same sort of service.
I think so. I mean, it's basically just providing a lot better clarity into who your user base is, because I think most of us don't know who our user base is.
So I think in the next 10 minutes, we're going to, after we finish wrapping up and here in the next 30 seconds, we're going to have to maybe make a phone call. Hey, Jack.
I might walk up to the 23rd floor and talk to the Kite Desk folks.
Yeah.
But for a future podcast, I do want to talk about the bigger picture of this, and that is that those of us in technology who are building technology startups, one of the things that I think we don't think about enough and that we need to pay more attention to is not just the value we're creating in our primary product that we're creating, mm-hmm. but the value that comes out of technologies we create in order to support our own business.
Absolutely.
That become their own products mm-hmm. over time.
Those are the infrastructure plays.
Right. That are maybe more valuable than the business itself over time. More on that in a future episode.
Actually, in a past episode titled Feature, Product, or Business.
We've
elaborated a little bit on that. But
yeah.
We'll also undoubtedly cover it later. Because that's how we do on Distilled, folks.
Indeed. Wow. Okay, I'm going to go try to pitch to some people now. That sounds like a great idea.
Thanks for listening, folks.
See you guys.